Hello and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. This is your host, Bill Howell, and we'll be covering a lot of interesting things this month. Besides our usual news items, we'll have interviews with Matt Pahala, the coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival, another interview with Bobby Wilkin, the brewer at Hoodoo Brewing Company in Fairbanks, plus our usual segments on beer gear, beer styles, and a feature segment on shaker pints and why I hate them. Hope you like our new opening song, Beers of Alaska by Recess Duty. Let's get started with the news. As of 7/12, Cooper Landing Brewing Company was awaiting the final approval of its state brewing license. Once it is approved, beers from the brewery will be on tap around Cooper Landing and crowlers will be on sale in a few locations. The brewery is purchasing a lot by the Bridge Boat Launch and hopes to break ground on a standalone brewery this fall or next spring. Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival tickets are on sale. The festival will be on Saturday, August 12th from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Soldotna Sports Center. Tickets are available at Cassox Brewery, Kenai River Brewing Company, St. Elias Brewing Company, or online at www.kenaibeerfest.com. Tickets are $30 for general admission from 6 to 9 p.m. or $50 for the VIP connoisseur hour starting at 5 p.m. For entertainment, Meg Lindsay from the Season 9 of The Voice has been confirmed, along with other live bands. The early session is limited to 200 tickets, so if you're interested, you should get yours before they sell out. Drinking on the Last Frontier will also be there, so be sure to look me up and say hello. Congratulations to Odd Man Rush Brewing in Eagle River for winning the Bear Paw President's Community Service Award from the Chugiak Eagle River Chamber of Commerce. Congratulations as well to Bear Paw River Brewing of Wasilla for winning the 2017 Foraker Award for Best Family-Owned Business from Alaska Business Monthly Magazine. Anchorage Brewing has announced that October 28th will be its annual Deal with the Devil Day. The brewery will be selling a custom wooden box set containing six different barrel-aged variations of its award-winning barley wine, A Deal with the Devil. All will be packaged in wax-dipped 375-milliliter bottles. These batches were aged for 16 months. The barrel varieties are Glenmorangie Scotch Whiskey, Apple Brandy, Woodford Reserve Double Oak, Rum, Cognac, and finally a special double-oaked version that spent 1 year in Cognac and then was transferred into freshly emptied Woodford Reserve Double Oak for 4 months to add even more complexity. The brewery will have around 400 box sets available, first come, first served, limited to one to a customer. Anchorage Brewing also released its first offerings in cans July 28th. The two beers released were Lines Cryo Hop Double IPA and Crazy Rays IPA. Congratulations are also in order for both Barnaby Brewing and Alaskan Brewing Company. The former took a gold medal in the 2017 U.S. Open Beer Championships with its McSteamy California Common Ale, while the latter took a silver medal with its raspberry wheat. Baranoff Island Brewing Company in Sitka has been in the process of moving to a new location for several months. The brewery was forced to close its prior operation at 21 Smith Street in late January and move to a new location at 1209 Sawmill Creek Road near the Sitka National Historic Park. While brewing operations were able to resume after only a few weeks, the tap room in the new facility was unfinished, forcing the brewery to remain closed to the public. All that changed on July 1st, when Baranoff Island was at last able to open its new tap room. Finished with locally harvested yellow cedar, the new tap room will likely be hugely popular with locals and tourists alike, just as the previous one was. Girdwood Brewing now has a crowler machine, allowing it to offer its beers to go in freshly filled 25-ounce aluminum cans. James Roberts, also known as Dr. Fermento, has just celebrated his 20th anniversary of writing about beer in Alaska for the Anchorage Press. 907 Ale House and Grill, located on Benson Avenue in Anchorage, has opened for business with over 35 different beers on tap. The Brewers Association has created a new logo. The Brewers Association, publishers of craftbeer.com, is launching the Independent Craft Brewer Seal, which could be a game changer in terms of transparency on the shelf. The Brewers Association says the new seal is a visual signal to help you make decisions when you shop. Quote, "A lot of beer lovers really care about who makes their beer, and they want to make sure it comes from a small and independent craft brewer," explains Paul Gatza, the director of the Brewers Association. "What this provides is a clear message to the beer drinker," end quote. That means in the coming weeks and months, you'll start seeing the seal on craft brewers' beer bottles, cans, labels, tap handles, and websites. The seal is your signal that the beer you're buying is from an independent craft brewer. The Brewers Association says global brewers' buying spree of once independent craft brewers in the last half decade has created muddy waters for drinkers who want to support independent brewers. Quote, "Big beer has gotten into the full-flavored beer space and are now more regionally located with their acquired formerly independent breweries," explains Julia Hertz, director of the Brewers Association Craft Beer Program and craftbeer.com publisher. "The beer lover has a right to know when they're purchasing a beer from an independent craft brewer or big beer. This seal will allow them to make their choice with a visual mark," end quote. Craft brewers who want the seal do not have to be a Brewers Association member, but they need to meet certain criteria, which are, one, the brewer must fit the Brewers Association craft beer definition. They must be small, with an annual production of 6 million barrels or less, approximately 3% of U.S. annual beer sales. They must be independent. Less than 25% of the craft brewery is owned or controlled by a beverage alcohol industry member that is not itself a craft brewer. And they must be traditional, a brewer that has a majority of its total beverage alcohol volume in beer whose flavor derives from traditional or innovative brewing ingredients and their fermentation. Flavored malt beverages are not considered beers. The brewer must have an active license to commercially brew in the United States. And three, breweries will sign a licensing agreement that will cover many bases, including if a brewery sells. If they are no longer a craft brewer, they aren't allowed to license the seal. They'll have to remove it from future packaging. The independent craft brewer seal looks like a beer bottle flipped upside down. Quote, "The upside-down nature of the bottle is truly representative of what small and independent craft brewers have done to the U.S. beer scene," Hertz explains. "They've turned things upside down, brought back the localization of beer movement, took us forward a full-flavored beer movement for variety and choice from thousands of breweries as opposed to hundreds. Look for the seal this summer as craft brewers incorporate it into new bottle labels, can art, and more." We'll be talking with Hoodoo brewer Bobby Wilkin later in the show, but Hoodoo Brewing has made a press announcement regarding its new solar power system. Hoodoo Brewing in Fairbanks, Alaska has become the first in the state to significantly harness solar power for its operations. Hoodoo Brewing Company began the new rooftop solar installation project as soon as snow melted off the brewery this April. The array of 60 solar panels was energized in mid-May and will produce up to 100 kilowatt hours of electricity per day, or about one-third of Hoodoo's power per year. Additionally, it will reduce the CO2 produced by combustion by roughly 1.5 tons per month during the summer season. "We are a community-focused company," owner and brewer Bobby Wilkins said, noting an emphasis on providing a product and service for the people in his hometown while being conscious of the environment. "We look at this solar project as pushing our community forward. We'll generate a nice chunk of renewable energy that runs our meter backwards, and anything extra goes back into the community's grid," end quote. The project is the product of a partnership with local solar company, Renewable Energy Systems of Alaska. The company spent most of the winter building out supports, reinforcing the trusses and roof of the Hoodoo's 1970s Alaska Pipeline-era building to support the weight and mechanics of the new project. They're 100% committed to doing it right, Wilkins said of RES. They're great local business people, and they're doing it right for the right reasons, end quote. Energy generation will fluctuate seasonally due to Hoodoo's subarctic location, but will feed into the community grid year-round. Over 3,000 kilowatt hours have been generated from the project so far, harnessing Fairbanks' 20-plus hours of daily sunlight in June and July. Data is gauged by a real-time cloud-based monitoring system. Quote, "The people of Fairbanks make our project sustainable and viable, but anything else we can do to push the boundaries is absolutely fantastic," Wilkin continues. "The brewing process is water and energy intensive. The quality of our beer is our first priority, but we're always looking for ways to make our process more reliable, more efficient, and it doesn't hurt to make our environment footprint a little smaller," end quote. Alaskan Brewing Company will be organizing a new homebrew competition in Juneau that builds on the tradition of the long-running Autumn Pour competition and adds exciting new features. There will be an entirely new category, a grand prize that includes a cash award, and the chance to brew a beer with Alaskan Brewing. Quote, "A passion for homebrewing and living in Alaska were the roots of starting Alaskan Brewing. We have been supporters of the homebrewing community since our inception. We hope that by building on the excitement of this event, we can attract more homebrewing innovation throughout Alaska," said Alaskan Communications Manager Andy Klein. Klein added that the brewery sponsors a National Beer Judge Certification Program training course and rigorous exam for homebrewers, including employees, and he believes Alaskan Brewing has more certified beer judge employees than most commercial breweries in the nation. "Expanding the opportunities to judge in Alaska is another reason that Alaskan Brewing is focused more effort on this event." Quote, "We took a number of steps to draw in more participants and increase the excitement level of this competition," Klein said. "We're going to award a cash prize of $500 to the winner of the Best in Show. Plus, we will give the winner an opportunity to come into our brewery and brew on our one-barrel system with one of our brewers. This is an extremely rare opportunity and the first time we have offered this to anyone outside of our brewery," end quote. Klein said that people at the brewery also thought about what might connect the competition to the brewing tradition in Juneau, which has thrived since Gold Rush days. "We thought about some of the cooking competitions that assign people a challenge ingredient and hit on the idea of incorporating a local ingredient into part of the competition," he said. "That idea led to the creation of the challenge portion of the competition for any beer brewed with this year's challenge ingredient, Sitka Spruce Tips. The winner of the Challenge Cup will receive the same opportunity to brew with an Alaskan brewer and will also receive the Challenge Cup for a year, a specially designed trophy meant for sharing throughout the year. To entice brewers throughout Alaska that may not have access to this special challenge ingredient, Alaskan Brewing is offering to provide Sitka Spruce Tips to any home brewer that wants to enter the competition, sent directly to the home brewer from Alaskan stash of Sitka Spruce Tips picked each year in Gustavus, Alaska. The competition will be held on October 14th, and the brewery is throwing a special party in celebration of AKtoberfest. Details on the party will be coming out in the near future. Any homebrewers interested in submitting beers can do so between September 18th and October 6th. Anyone interested in receiving spruce tips can fill out the request form at alaskanbeer.com/homebrew. That wraps up the news items for this month. Stay tuned for our next segment where we'll be interviewing Matt Pahala, the coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival, taking place on August 12th. This is KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Okay, this is Bill Howell again for Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai Soldotna. And we're at the Soldotna Sports Center interviewing Matt Pahala, the coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival That'll be taking place on Saturday, August 12th. So we're here at the Sports Center, and Matt's going to walk us around and tell us what the festival is going to be like. So thanks, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for setting this up for today. And we're here in the entryway where we'll use it for the gate where a person comes in. If they don't have a ticket, they can buy it at the gate. But if they do have a ticket, just a quick scan and then pick up their glass and drink tokens.
Okay.
So after you exit through that area, you walk out through the side exit over by the restrooms here in the Sports Center, and then out into where the festival will be, which is the parking lot area. It's the same area that we've traditionally had.
This is like the seventh year of the festival, right?
It is, yes. Yeah, so the first year we didn't know what to expect as far as how popular it would be, how successful it would be, and we started out at the Hutchings old dealership up on Pickle Hill, and that turned out to be a good venue for the numbers that we got, but it was obvious from the first year we needed a little bit bigger venue. So we moved it over here to the Sports Center, and now we're outside, and right off of the side of where the conference rooms are, if you can imagine the fence going out. We like to call it an acre of beer. So Marcus Mueller, who's been integral in coordinating the festival with us over the years, he's a land management guy, and he measured it out, and it's pretty close to a solid acre of
I like the sound of that, acre of beer. That's a good thing to call it. But it's not just beer as well. We're going to have food vendors, right?
Yeah, there are several food vendors. I don't have the final list, but some of them that have been with us for a while, Yo Taco is going to be there again, Hot Dog a la Carte, and I'm not sure who we have for barbecue this year. That's sort of we have that kind of rotating since there's so many barbecue places around. And then a few others. I'm not sure what that final list is yet. I did just get a confirmation from Hoodoo last night that Hoodoo's definitely going to be there. So they're the 23rd either brewery or distributor or winery that will be there. So.
Well, that's great. We just interviewed Bobby Wilkin from Hoodoo, and he's very excited that his folks are going to be here. He can't be here himself this year, but that's great that they're going to come all the way from Fairbanks for this. So.
Yeah.
So that speaks well to the reputation of the festival.
Absolutely. If we walk over this way, this is where the stage is going to be. We've got three bands this year. We're going to start out with Juno Smile. They're going to start probably around the same time as the Connoisseur Hour kicks off. And we'll probably finish up after the general admission is going. After them, they'll be followed by Megan Lindsay, which is one of the finalists from the Voice from a couple years ago. And then Rob Justice Band is going to close the night out.
Now, that sounds like a good lineup. Are you going to be doing the awards again this year?
Yeah, we have the People's Choice Brewery and People's Choice Beer. We're going to do the People's Choice Brewery a little bit different. We're still going to do paper ballots, but to change that a little bit, we're also going to weigh the tokens that are collected and have that factored in a little bit. So we have a little bit of a metric figured out where it'll be a combination of the weight plus paper ballots.
Well, that's an interesting way to go about it. It'll be interesting to see if there's any difference between the paper ballots and the actual weight of tokens that are used.
Well, people tend to vote with their feet, right? So we figure if that'd be another way of collecting some of that data and just, yeah, giving it a different aspect. And I know there are some people that don't ever take the time to write their favorite brewery down, so it's at least factoring that in a little bit.
So I think you said you were going to have about 1,200 tickets available this year. You expect it to sell out?
We do expect it to sell out. There are 200 of the Connoisseur tickets that we're selling. We've got about 100 physical tickets at the local breweries here, and then the other ones you can get them online. So we're keeping pretty close track of that so that we can close those off on the online gate in time. And then, yeah, we expect to sell out again for the general admission.
So tell us a little bit about what the funds that you raise for this go towards?
Well, this is a fundraiser for the Rotary Club of Soldotna. One of the main things that we use these funds for is the RAFT fund, which is Rotary Assistance for Transportation. And that's a fund that's administered through the Central Peninsula Foundation. And it's essentially rides for people that can't afford or don't have a ride to or from the hospital for treatment, or if there's an emergency room type of situation and they don't have a ride home. So that's something that we've funded for years. Actually, since the festival happened, that's been one of the major donations. And then we have local projects that every year are a little bit different. So we recently helped install the outhouse over at the Wolverine Trailhead across the way here at Salteshi. And then we've had various other projects over the years.
Now, I think that's very important that everybody realizes that all the beer that's served here by both the brewers and the distillers is all donated, and that all the funds that are raised go to support local causes, worthy causes, right here on the Central Peninsula.
Yeah, and we definitely want to make sure that the brewers get the recognition they deserve, because without them, this wouldn't happen. And from the start of the festival, our approach for the festival has been not looking at it as a fundraiser, but looking at it as if we create this framework where the brewers can come and show off what they've got and interact with the people that are coming to the festival, then it's a win-win. And that's really the approach we like to take, is that it's not a fundraiser. It's something for the community. It's something where the brewers can feel like they're giving back, and so it works out great.
Are you guys going to have rides arranged again this year?
Yeah, we want to make sure everyone gets home safe. So we'll have Alaska Cab again here providing discounted rides. And that's been great success from the start. On the Sunday when we come back and clean everything up, there's typically a full lot of cars. And that's the way we want to see it, is that people aren't coming here and then thinking that they can drive home if they're not able to. Anyway, we can get someone home safe, that's great. Designated drivers are encouraged to come and enjoy the festival too. There's a little bit of a discounted ticket at the gate. And it's essentially the ticket if you subtract the cost of the drink samples. That way, if someone does come as a designated driver and then they change their mind, it's really easy. They just go buy the tokens and then they can sample as well.
Well, that sounds great. And 23 out of 33 or so breweries in the state, that's a pretty good showing. So this is a great chance for anybody here in the local area to come and sample a lot of beers that are not typically available in the local area here. So
that's, yeah, I need
that's
to
really
go back
good.
And check my records, but I think this is the highest number of breweries represented at our festival yet. So we're pretty proud of that, and it seems to get a little bit bigger and a little bit better every year. So all else fails, you know, we're hoping for a sunny day. And
yeah, well, that's, you guys have had pretty good luck with the weather gods, so hopefully that knock wood that continues and we get a nice day for it, and everybody can come out and enjoy themselves and enjoy the music, enjoy the food, enjoy the beer.
Yeah, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, it rained the entire time while we were setting up, and then it's like as we opened the gate, the clouds parted, sunshine came down, it was beautiful. As soon as we closed the gates, it clouded up, it started raining. So yeah, we've got a like special word in with the weather people. So,
well, thanks, Matt. We really appreciate you taking the time to come out here and show us where everything's going to be, and really looking forward to the festival on Saturday, August the 12th, starting at 5 o'clock for the VIP session and 6 o'clock for the general admission.
Thanks, Bill. And for those who aren't aware, you can get your tickets at KenaiBeerFest.com.
All right. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with Bill Howell on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. So after the break, we'll have my feature segment on why I hate shaker pints. So stay tuned.
Beers of Alaska. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soul Dotna. Now for this month's feature story, Shaker Pints and Why I Hate Them. Everywhere you go, you find them. They seem to multiply like wire coat hangers in your closet. Walk into almost any bar or pub serving craft beer, and the odds are good that the beer you order will be served to you in one of them. They are the straight-sided, wide-mouth glasses known in the trade as shaker pints. They are also an abomination. You're thinking, that's pretty strong language, Bill. Aren't you perhaps getting a bit carried away? No, not in the slightest. Point one, these glasses were never intended for serving. A shaker pint was, and is, the glass half of a Boston cocktail shaker. They've been stocked behind bars for mixing drinks since the early 20th century, long before their takeover of American draft beer, as if waiting in the wings. When James Bond has his vodka martini, shaken, not stirred, with ice to mix and chill it, it's poured from a shaker pint into the actual serving glass before being placed in front of him. Even worse, because these glasses were never designed for actual serving, most of them are not even true pints. If you want to have some fun at a bar you don't mind being chucked out of, take a graduated glass measuring cup in with you. When you're served your pint, pour what you've received into it. I'll bet you dollars to donuts that the maximum amount of beer you'll have is 14 ounces, or 87.5% of a standard American pint, or a mere 70% of the 20-ounce imperial pint that our Brit cousins are served by law. Each pint glass in Britain is etched with a small crown, certifying that it is a true and genuine pint under the authority of Her Majesty's weights and measures. Oh, and that pint of British bitter you ordered? It doesn't include the foam on top, so you can request a top-up from the barkeep after you've taken your first drink to account for that. Unlike us colonials, the Brits take their pints very, very seriously. So how did we end up being served beer in shaker pints? Well, prior to Prohibition, most beer in the U.S. was served in smaller mugs and glasses. Pints were only common in British-style pubs. Then, from the end of World War II until the rise of craft brewing in the late 1970s, all the draft beer in America was pretty insipid stuff, as the mega brewers ran the last of the small regional brewers out of business. Garrett Oliver, brewmaster at the Brooklyn Brewery and author of the Oxford Companion to Beer, surmises that this lack of quality beer, though with plenty of mass market beer to go round, was the shaker pint's opportunity to rise. Why bother with a fancy glass when the beer you're drinking is nothing special? Quote, complaining that your glass wasn't good enough for your beer would have been like complaining your paper plate wasn't good enough for Wonder Bread, he says. And the shaker pint had a lot to recommend it from a purely utilitarian perspective. It was cheap, durable, steady, and stacked easily. A server needed to worry less about splashing or spilling than with a dainty flute, or about smashing that fancier glass on the way back to the bar. And for managers, using the shaker pint for draft meant you needed fewer kinds of glasses in your bar, saving money and precious shelf space. Which brings us to the second reason why I hate shaker pints. Point two. These glasses are so useful that most bars use them for everything, from fountain sodas to mixed drinks. This means it's nigh impossible for them to actually be clean enough to properly serve craft beers. Using a glass that is not beer clean means that the drinker will not be able to actually experience the beer as the brewer intended. Rather, they will also get to taste the residue left by whatever was in it previously and/or the traces of the detergent used to wash it. Getting glasses beer clean is a serious matter, so we'll leave that subject for another day. For now, suffice it to say that having a big stack of glasses behind the bar and using them for anything that's ordered is most definitely not the way to go about it. So that's another reason to despise these glasses. But wait, there's more. Point three, and the most damning point of all. Even if you have an oversized shaker that actually holds what you've paid for, and you've somehow managed to get one that's beer clean, this style of glass does absolutely nothing to enhance the beer being served in it. A beer's head dissipates much too quickly in a shaker pint due to the combination of its shape and wide mouth. The shape doesn't capture the aroma of the beer, but rather helps it dissipate. The straight sides also force you to grip it rather tightly, meaning the heat from your hand will rapidly warm the beer above its proper serving temperature. To quote Garrett Oliver again, I think a shaker pint is probably the worst glass out there. It's pretty much a jam jar. Of course, I know of at least one local bar that serves its beer in actual jam jars, so I guess things can always get worse. So now that we know why shaker pints are an abomination against good beer, why do so many bars and pubs use them? Money, of course. As I said, shaker pints are cheap, sturdy, easily stackable, allowing for better storage behind the bar. Many bars receive them free as promotional items. If you've ever had a local craft brewed IPA slapped down in front of you in a pint glass with a Bud Light logo on it, you're probably drinking out of just such a freebie. And finally, if the bar is underserving by 12.5% or more, there are some thick-bodied shakers out there that hold as little as 12 ounces, the beer saved and sold later goes straight to the bottom line. Given that, you can see why so many bar owners out there just love those good old shaker pints. So what should your beer be served in? Well, many beer styles have their own traditional glass, but that's probably too much to ask of your average bar. Still, a glass that is narrower at the top than at the bottom, be it a tulip or even the traditional British Nonic pub glass, is far superior when it comes to head retention and odor enhancement. Shaker pints are essentially unknown outside of the United States, so it's by no means impossible to operate a bar or pub using better glassware. People do it all over the world. So now you know why I hate shaker pints and why you should too. Go forth and spread the word. Compliment those bar owners that are wise enough to serve their craft beers in something else, and ask those who aren't what they're doing with those other 2 ounces of beer you've paid for. In our next segment, we'll interview Bobby Wilkin, the brewer at Hoodoo Brewing Company of Fairbanks, Alaska. This is Bill Howell, drinking on the last frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst. Beers of Alaska.
Hello and welcome back. This is Bill Howell on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. And we're talking with Bobby Wilkin, the owner brewer behind Hoodoo Brewing Company of Fairbanks. Hey, Bobby, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Well, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. So, got a few questions. Tell us what you think. The first one I wanted to ask you is, tell us a little bit about your background, how you ended up as a commercial brewer.
I started homebrewing in college. I went to University of Montana. Lived right near a brewery, so kind of started going there. We heard they gave away free samples, so started going there immediately and regularly and drinking all our free samples at Big Sky Brewing down there. And then started going to a couple other breweries in Missoula, and then learned you could homebrew, so I was all over that. And my buddies and I in our little house down there, we all started homebrewing and just thought it was so awesome. So really, when we bottled up our first batch, it was probably in 99 or 2000, we were like, oh man, wouldn't that be cool to open a brewery in Fairbanks, and wow, that'd be so neat. And it was kind of just a pipe dream, but it really totally just stuck with me all through college, and how neat that would be to have a brewery up here. Started traveling, of course, to breweries and kept home brewing, you know, got done with college, got a real job, and then did that for about 4 years. I was a research analyst at a company up here in Fairbanks, and kept home brewing and just thinking how, man, that'd be so cool to start a brewery, and I just had no idea how to even get started doing it. So did that for about 4 years and then found a brewing school, and I thought, you know, that would educate me and I'd learn about the industry, and, you know, at worst it would be a really good time, I'm sure, and then maybe someday a brewery might come out of it. So I went to a Siebel Institute in 2005, went over to Germany to the Domens Academy. They had a little combination program, so did those, and it just reinforced my love for the beer and brewing, and the time in Germany made me really respect kind of the European beers and the history and the culture over there. And then I came back to Fairbanks to kind of start the brewery in 2006, but then I got a lot of advice. You got to work at a brewery before you start a brewery. I heard 1,000 times. So I decided to kind of hold off, and got a job at Alaskan Brewing down in Juneau after 8 months of pestering them to let me work there as a brewer, and just had an awesome time, was a brewer for 3 years and learned so much, and then got a job in their quality control lab. I was doing production brewing for the first few years, and then when I was in the lab doing plant-wide quality control of the beer, every batch, doing all sorts of analysis. They have a great lab down there, really good quality program. So got to learn so much just kind of almost on a statistical nature of beer, of what little changes do, what ingredients do. Did a lot of test brewing, test batches for them. and just had a great time down there. And then it kind of came to a point of, well, I love my job. I love Alaskan brewing, and I could work here basically forever. And then it was kind of like, well, do I want to do that, or do I want to try and start a brewery? So kind of hemmed and hawed on that for months, if not years. And then my wife and I decided to just, throw caution to the wind, and we both quit our jobs on the same day down there and then moved up here to Fairbanks, moved into my parents' basement, and lived out of a suitcase for a couple of years while we found a scuzzy old pipeline warehouse, and spent our lives in here for about 2 years, turning it into Hoodoo Brewing. We opened on Halloween 2012, so we're coming up on our fifth anniversary.
For listeners who haven't been lucky enough to get up to Fairbanks and visit you, why don't you describe your brewing operation a little bit there?
We have a 4,000 square foot, like I said, an old warehouse from the 70s, just a standard big box in an industrial area in Fairbanks, but right in the middle of Fairbanks. Fairbanks has some, kind of like a lot of Alaskan cities, has these weird pockets of industrial area right in the middle of town. So we're right very centrally located, but kind of off to the side in this warehouse neighborhood, I guess like a lot of breweries can be. And so the building is pretty nondescript, but we have a beautiful brewing setup in here. We have a premier stainless brewing equipment that's basically in the tap room. It's just one huge room. So we have this beautiful brew house, German-style brew house, so three-vessel. And then all the tanks are 30-barrel tanks, kind of up to the 16-foot ceilings. It's just a beautiful arrangement. And we spend a lot of time cleaning them. We're very proud of our process and proud of the breweries. And then this beautiful tap room. Got some nice cherry wood, and I don't know, it's just a great feeling in here. It's just a great place to have a beer. When we started building it, we really didn't have an end plan in mind, but we just made decisions saying, well, of all the places we've been all over the world to have beer, man, I really liked that place, and I really liked this place. And so we kind of just combined all these elements to just create a really good feeling place to just appreciate really good beer. And then we've, over the years, we've expanded outside into a nice beer garden tables outside on the north side of the building. That's awesome in the summer and now even in the winter. We're going to start actually renovating our beer garden next week and putting in a couple of fire pits out there. And I'm trying to make the best beer garden in the world in Fairbanks, Alaska. But it's really just, it's just a warehouse in the middle of an industrial area. But then you walk inside and it just makes you thirsty, and everybody here is having a grand old time.
I saw you got your parking lot paved. I'm sure that made everybody happy too, right?
Yeah, we had a big mud hole as our parking lot for a few years there, and then we finally bit the bullet, and now we have this beautiful parking lot, and so we're on to the beer garden now.
So looking ahead, where do you see Hoodoo in 5 or 10 years?
It's a good question. I really don't know. We're not on kind of a trajectory of volume growth. This time of year, we're basically at our peak production capacity, and I really like it that way. I see it as a kind of a sweet spot for breweries where really small is really fun, and as you get bigger, it's really, really fun. And then the company's very small. We just have about a dozen employees. Most of them are just part-time in the tap room. Really just myself and my brother-in-law, Paul. We produce all the beer, and all the production is just us. So I really like doing all that, and I really like the hard work that kind of physically making beer is. So, I don't see us building a building and tacking on tanks. But, I have no idea. I try and just take it one day at a time, one month at a time, and just do what feels right. I really like the lifestyle of just being happy and producing a craft, really more as an art, and just trying to make the best beer possible. And that's kind of priority number one. And if there's any doubt that that would be sacrificed, then we don't even go down any sort of road. So I like to have kind of complete control to make sure that every glass of Hoodoo is absolutely perfect. And, that's one of the reasons we don't distribute far and wide. We're just in about a dozen accounts in Fairbanks. For the most part, we do have one Prospector Pizza in Denali. It's just because we like the beer to be incredibly fresh, just right out of the brewery, really, and just to be perfect. Even if wherever you are in town and you have a Hoodoo, it's just perfect. So I don't really know where we'll be at. You would have asked me a couple of years ago if we'd ever pave our parking lot. I'd probably say I have no idea. Probably not. I don't know. We were in a pretty good spot, and I think we have a pretty special thing. So I'm not in any rush to kind of blow past it.
Well, I know you don't distribute a whole lot, and we really appreciate the fact that you're going to be sending some beer down here for the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival in August. So it's a good chance for everybody down here, if they haven't had a chance to sample Hoodoo before, It's kind of unique to have it available here locally.
Yeah, we had a couple of our beers at the Frozen River Fest, and I think we were the first to run out. I think we didn't send enough or something, but we're sending more this time, and I think we'll have our Kolsch and our IPA. Our IPA is just awesome, and then we're going to have our Mosaic Pale Ale, which is we're going to tap next week. We'll send a couple kegs of that down. And then either our Bavarian Hefeweizen or our Belgian wheat beer that we just tapped a few weeks ago. They're both just phenomenal. So we're trying to decide between those two wheat beers. But it should be a pretty good selection down there.
Great. So you mentioned you really like the hands-on physical aspect. What do you like best about being a brewer, and what do you like least?
I like probably best about being a brewer, and I really latched onto it when I was working at Alaskan Brewing, was the, I guess, kind of working by yourself, and you have kind of a task to complete, and just being able to do it as efficiently as possible in how you complete a task. I don't necessarily like to work alone. I like to work with groups and et cetera. I feel like I'm in a job interview, but I like the aspect of you can focus on exactly what you're doing and almost calculate exactly how you're going to do it in as efficient as possible, but with kind of high quality, not cutting corners, and creating a pride in what you do and really just doing a good job. And it really does make you feel good when you know that you've done your best.
So that's what you love. What don't you love? What do you like the least?
I would say I don't love, I don't know, probably don't love the brew day when it's a 95 degree Fairbanks day. It's a little hot. It's a little hot. But, you know, sometimes there's some early mornings where I've been sampling a little too late, but you know, we tend to start pretty early, so I don't love that. I don't know, there's not a whole lot I don't like about it. It's hard work, and especially being the business owner, like I said, it's nonstop chaos basically, but I've learned to embrace it. It's just how it's got to be, so I've learned to love it, I guess. I take what I hate and I love it.
Okay, well, one final question, Bobby. If you could say one thing to everyone who walks through your door for the first time, what would that be?
I would say welcome to Hoodoo, and I really hope you enjoy your experience. You know, it's not really just about the beer, it's the experience. I really hope you enjoy your time here, and we've done everything in our power to make it just a great experience while you're here for these few minutes or a couple hours. So enjoy.
Well, that's a good note to end on. So thanks, Bobby, for taking time out of your busy day. As you say, I know you guys are all slammed this time of year, trying to brew beer as fast as you can. But really appreciate it, and looking forward to seeing your beers down here next month.
You bet. Thank you very much for giving me a call. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This is Bill Howell for Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai.
Beers of Alaska.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. This is your host, Bill Howell, and it's time for our monthly beer style segment. In this month, we're going to talk about porters, one of the oldest styles of beer out there. The origins of the style of beer known today as porter date back to the early 1700s in Britain. It was the most popular style of beer in the English-speaking world until the 1870s. The production of porter was one of the driving forces of the Industrial Revolution, and it's the earliest style of beer for which we have anything approaching accurate records, as it was the style being brewed when such critical scientific instruments as the thermometer and the hydrometer were invented. George Washington drank porter. His favorite was brewed by one Richard Hare of Philadelphia, and we still have letters from him extolling its virtues and ordering extra stocks after a fire at the brewery in 1790. It seems likely that the beer style received its name from its popularity with the city porters of London. These men transported goods back and forth across the city on their backs and were frequently in need of serious refreshment. The true origin of porter remains obscure. One legend attributes its creation to a Ralph Harwood, the owner of Bell Brewhouse in Shoreditch, East London, in 1722. However, it seems more likely that the style evolved gradually from the earlier brown ales popular in London at the time, with no one individual being solely responsible. We do know that the original porters were a blend of different beers, some younger or fresher, while others that had been aged or staled in the terminology of the day. This aging took place initially in wooden casks, but these soon gave way to even larger wooden vessels or vats to enable the breweries to take advantage of economies of scale. With our current scientific knowledge, we can surmise that these wooden vats must have harbored both lactobacillus and Brettanomyces yeast in the pores of the wood from which they were constructed. These microbes would have imparted some acidity or sourness to the porter as it aged, and this contribution would have become a flavor component in the final blended product. The scale of porter production expanded tremendously throughout the 18th and early 19th centuries. Porter brewers were quick to incorporate early aspects of the Industrial Revolution, such as the steam engine. The size of their vats continued to grow, with capacities in excess of 25,000 barrels becoming common. However, these sizes were straining the limits of the technology available, as was demonstrated in October 1814, when a vat at the Mew Brewery, filled with some 27,750 barrels of porter, burst. The resulting tidal wave of beer demolished nearby buildings, drowning or crushing 8 people to death. Porter was also popular outside Britain, spawning some variations which are today considered separate beer styles in their own right. A stronger version of porter, called stout porter, became very popular in Ireland when produced by a Dublin brewer by the name of Arthur Guinness. Eventually, the second word was dropped and this stout became a style in its own right, one which would eventually spawn its own family of substyles, such as Russian Imperial, sweet, and dry stouts. English porter was also very popular in Russia, especially in the Baltic states, which were then under the rule of the Tsars. When British imports were eventually banned, local versions sprang up. These so-called Baltic porters actually used lager rather than ale yeasts used in Britain, but continue to be brewed to this day and are another recognized porter variant. Despite the huge popularity of porter in its heyday, we have only a vague understanding of how it must have tasted. The best we can do is to draw some reasonable inferences. The original porter, no doubt, was a deep shade of brown to mahogany, made from a grist of the standard floor-malted brown malt of the day, with some smoky notes from the kilning of the grain over open wood, straw, coal, or coke fires. After the invention of black patent malt in 1817, this brown malt was replaced by a combination of pale malt and black patent, as the new scientific instrumentation had demonstrated that this was a more efficient process. Porters appear to have been highly hopped, although the initial bitterness would have mellowed over the months of aging. And, of course, the presence of lactobacillus and Brettanomyces would have been responsible for the admiring mentions that have come down to us of the stale flavors of well-regarded porters from the 1800s. However, after a century and a half of popularity, tastes began to change, especially after the introduction of Pilsner-style lagers in the mid-19th century. In Britain, pale ales and bitters became the beers of choice, with porter entering a long, slow decline from about 1870 on. By the late 1950s, a few porters were still being brewed in London, but the style was clearly headed for oblivion. However, all that changed in 1975 when Fritz Maytag of Anchor Brewing in San Francisco created his Anchor Porter. Still brewed to this day, this beer served as an inspiration to the new breed of American craft brewers who would begin brewing in the 1980s. Included among them were Jeff and Marcy Larson of Alaskan Brewing Company, opening for business in 1986. By 1988, they would be producing their Alaskan Smoked Porter, the beer which has won more medals than any other at the Great American Beer Festival. These new Americanized porters tended to be stronger than their English cousins, with more hop bitterness from using Pacific Northwest hop varieties. After a century of decline, porter was on the upswing again. The typical craft brewed porter of today will be medium brown to very dark brown, often with ruby-like highlights and a full tan-colored head. The aroma will have a medium, light to medium, strong, dark malt presence, often with a lightly burnt character, suggesting coffee or dark chocolate. On the palate, the flavor profile is similar to the aroma, with dark malt, coffee, and chocolate notes predominant. Alcohol by volume is typically 4.8 to 6.5%, though stronger versions exist as well. If you're looking to taste locally produced porters, Cassox Brewery regularly offers its Moose Point Porter, while Kenai River Brewing offers its Pothole Porter on occasion. St. Elias Brewing frequently has a porter on offer. Various brews include its popular Fair Trade Coffee Porter, its Vanilla Bean Porter, Baltic Porter, Colonial Porter, and H&H East India Porter. Further afield, Midnight Sun Brewing bottles its Arctic Rhino Coffee Porter, Silver Gulch Brewing has its Pickaxe Porter, and Arco's Brewery produces Number 5 Boxcar Porter. If you're going to pair porter with a meal, the classic choice is a porterhouse steak. Obviously, this cut of steak got its name from its prevalence in being served in the famous porterhouses of London. So basically, any type of grilled beef should go excellent with porter or even with a barbecue. The roast flavors of the meat pair well with the roast flavors of the beer. That's it for this month's beer style. In our next segment, we'll talk about beer gear. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
IPAs, ales, and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you leap, sip before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Let us travel through time and space by listening to music of Latin America, exploring artists from the past and present. I am Carmen Esmeralda, and I invite you to join me at America Latina every Friday at 7:15 p.m. here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
You know, when you get up in the morning and you're struggling to find the coffee pot, sometimes it helps to have a friendly voice, keeping you calm and informed. Well, that's what we do here. I'm Jay Barrett. You might remember me from 20 years ago when I worked here before. Well, I'm back, and I'm happy to be your guide from 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL FM 91.9, Kenai, Soldotna. For our final segment this month, it's time for beer gear. I've got two new books to recommend to you. The first is entitled Ancient Brews Rediscovered and Recreated by Patrick E. McGovern. Patrick E. McGovern is part-time modern scientist, part-time Indiana Jones. He's a professor of anthropology at the University of Pennsylvania who uncovers and recreates the oldest alcoholic beverages ever found. In 2009, he published Uncorking the Past, The Quest for Wine, Beer, and Other Alcoholic Beverages, a scholarly examination of his research on early examples of fermentation from various archaeological sites around the world. His latest work, Ancient Brews Rediscovered and Recreated, is designed to appeal to a much broader audience. In Ancient Brews, McGovern takes the reader on a fascinating journey through time back to the beginning when our ancestors were likely already experimenting with high-sugar fruits, honey, roots and cereals, herbs, and tree resins to concoct the perfect drink. Early beverage makers must have marveled at the magical process of fermentation. Their amazement would have grown as they drank the mind-altering liquids, which were to become the medicines, religious symbols, and social lubricants of later cultures. Interweaving archaeology and science, McGovern leads the reader on his adventures to China, Turkey, Egypt, Italy, Scandinavia, Honduras, Peru, and Mexico. We share in his laboratory discoveries, including an early Neolithic cocktail from China made of wild grapes, hawthorn fruit, rice, and honey, an elite New World cacao beverage that gods and kings delighted in, and the Midas touch of central Turkey. These liquid time capsules defied modern conventions by mixing wine, beers, meads, and botanicals together into heady, delicious, extreme beverages. For the intrepid reader, homebrew interpretations of each ancient beverage and culturally appropriated matching meal recipes are provided, transporting our senses and imaginations back to the future. So if you're interested in the history of fermentation, I strongly recommend Ancient Brews Rediscovered and Recreated. The second work is called Beer in So Many Words, the best writing on the greatest drink. Through the course of literary history, a great deal has been written about beer. Now award-winning beer writer Adrian Turney Jones has collected some of the very best of it in an endlessly entertaining anthology packaged as a beautiful small format hardback. In it, you'll find great writing celebrating good ale from A.E. Housman and Ernest Hemingway to Inspector Morse, Ian Rankin, and Ice Cold and Alex, as well as the best beer writers of today like Peter Brown and Evan Rail, along with some of the funniest and most delicious celebrations of beer in fiction and poetry. It makes a great gift for the beer lover in your life. So if you're interested in hearing what the greatest writers have had to say about the world's greatest drink, check out Beer in So Many Words. Well, that about wraps up the show for this month. In closing, I'd like to leave you with some words of wisdom from that greatest of American philosophers, Homer Simpson. Bart, a woman is like a beer. They look good, they smell good, and you'd step over your own mother to get one. So on that happy thought, I wish you all good day from Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is Bill Howell. Tune in next month where we'll have a report from the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival.
Yeah.